Hey, Bulgudy.
Hey, Ben, how's it going?
I was just gonna text you to see if you were able to decipher my message.
Yeah. And in fact, I did, and I was like, I was gonna write back and say, just to be clear, it's this, right? But I was like, we know each other well enough.
Yeah.
I think it'll be fine. So for those not in the know, which is everybody except for you and me, and I guess Jennifer knows this too. Jennifer, my wife, Jennifer Fact Checker, we'll get to that in a moment. Yesterday we were going to record, but I got invited to go to an escape room.
And I'm glad to see that you got out.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was one of those things where you could leave the room whenever you wanted to.
Well, that doesn't seem
what
fair.
What this one was is you were trying to find a will that was in a safe. And it was one of those cases where I was very good, but also the people that were with me helped, and we didn't make it. So,
was the difficulty turned up or something?
It was a pretty difficult thing. The big issue is that, like, and this is what you have to do when you're a person like me who takes not getting something very hard. I thought back to the fact that there was a time when other people were right, and I probably would have gotten there, but I didn't get there. They got there first.
Did that irk you?
Well, no. The thing is that there were things that they got wrong, that I felt if they had not gone down certain alleys, we would have gotten done sooner. But I am able to pull back and go, well, yes, but they got to this place sooner. So, you know, that was a good thing also.
I've never done an escape room, but I did read a Reddit thread where the question was asked of people who worked in escape rooms. Like, what was the worst thing you ever seen?
Yeah.
And there were some pretty terrific stories coming out of this thread. One was, I believe, this guy witnessed a couple breaking up because they never really learned how to work together. And
yeah.
So it was just, it spiraled downhill once they needed to cooperate.
I'll give you a good example of where I went wrong, for example. There was a thing. So Andy, who's been on the podcast before, was one of the people at the escape room. Andy finished a puzzle at the exact same time as someone else finished a puzzle. And Andy was like, I think my puzzle was the one that made this thing happen. And I was kind of on the side of the other person, strictly because they were doing something that I had figured out. But the fact is that the puzzle that they did, there were some other steps that had to occur.
Yeah.
And so Andy actually did the thing that made the thing happen. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess theoretically, without having been there or without any more details.
Okay, so imagine this. There's a switchboard, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a clock. And right when the person plugged in the last thing on the switchboard, Andy set the dials on the clock. These two things happened at the exact same time. And then a panel opened.
So you don't know if it was the clock dial or the switchboard that
right.
Triggered
the panel? Right. And I'm telling you this because now I've come to the realization that it was the clock. And the reason the guy who ran the room said, yeah, the clock was the thing that did it. I had my back to him when he was setting the clock. I saw the person plug the thing in and the lights go on.
Yeah.
Right? So I thought that the two of those things were connected. And I was like, well, this obviously did it. And Andy was like, well, I actually did the clock thing at the exact same time. But I was like, no. And so I didn't take that into account, that I could have been mistaken as far as that goes, because I obviously saw the thing work when the person plugged the thing in.
Right, but correlation is not causation, Paul Goody.
Exactly, that is correct. Andy and I did not get in, we didn't break up over it, but here's the thing. At the end, though, they have signs that you hold, that, like, my brain hurts, or this person didn't help, or I'm mad that this didn't work.
Ouch.
But the sign that I got that I used was, we're awesome.
Yeah.
And I tried to convince everybody else to also hold signs that made it look like we made it through. Because no one's going to know except for us and the guy who...
Right, right.
And I know what you're going to say. Well, Paul, you would know. And you're an honest guy and all that. Which is true. But this is the this is one of those situations of, in the end, didn't we beat the escape room? The escape room can't make it look like we lost. It can't become sentient and make us choose the bad signs.
I mean, so, it's just a matter of time until escape rooms become a little bit more permanent. You can't get out until you're able to get out. None of this cheating stuff. None of this. And we're going to let you out anyway.
I mean, we had a conversation. The group had a conversation about, like, video games and puzzles and stuff like that. And we're all older folks. We're all in our 40s.
Yeah.
Right? Except for Andy's daughter was there, and she's younger than 40, which is probably, you know, understandable. But the idea that people are able to, and this goes back to the reason, you know, for the rules on this podcast of not looking up stuff, people will complain about puzzle games, right? And they're like, oh, this only took me, you know, 4 hours to get through or whatever. And lots of times the people that are playing these games are looking up clues online for how to get through certain things.
What?
In which case, yeah, it's not going to take you any time at all. You have to sit there and, I mean, there's a difference between being bored and being maddened by something not working.
It'll only take you as long as your Wi-Fi connection.
Exactly. But for me, like, I'm starting this new thing where I'm learning to do math in my head. And I know you're saying, well, Paul, it's actually kind of easy if you... But I'm talking about, like, bigger math problems.
Not, like, how to calculate a tip.
No, like squaring any two-digit number. You know, stuff like that.
Just casually, cool. In your free time, you just try to do complex math in your head.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are exercises that I'm going through and working on and stuff like that.
Yeah,
And it's pretty cool. You know, I don't want to bore anybody. I did this joke to Betty. I was like, you know, Betty, doing math is just like riding a bicycle. And she's like, stop! You're not my math teacher. Quit it, you know, or whatever. But I. So it kind of messed up the joke, but I will tell it to you anyway because I think it's great. It's one that I came up with. Doing math is just like riding a bicycle. If you're not careful, you could get hit by a car. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's fun because people aren't used to it.
It's what I call one of those anti-jokes.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, I didn't make up
the name. I'm on a seafood diet, mostly fish, also scallops, and...
Yeah.
I love them, Ben. I can't help it. But I won't. There are times when Jennifer is very mad at me about the jokes that I do. But she's around me all the time. So
why was Jesus hit with the ladies? Because he was charming and sincere and respected them.
Yeah, that's right. Jesus is on the cross. He says, Simon Peter, Simon Peter. Simon Peter says, what is it, Lord? And Jesus says, I'm doing this to atone for the sins of the world. And if you believe in me, you'll never die. And then you, I mean, that's close. If I were a, if I were a youth pastor, I would do that joke. I think it'd be fun. People would like it.
So Jennifer gets mad at you when you tell auntie jokes.
Well, here's the thing. She gets mad at me, quote unquote. I think it's twofold. I think it's like, you know, she, and I do the same thing when people do it to me. We're good enough at comedy that we know that it's not fun unless, like, a pun isn't fun unless I'm mad at you for making it. So exactly. We exaggerate how angry we are so that the thing works.
Yeah, yeah.
But in addition to that, she gets really mad at me, like, for real, I think. Because she's like, this is what my life has become. I have to deal with this now. But I don't know for sure, Ben. But it was cool hanging out with those guys.
Now, were these guys, you said they were from your sketch group. This is from when you were in college?
I was out of MU, right? At UMC, sorry, not MU. At UMC, University of Missouri Columbia, I was in a group called American Scream. And then when I went to SIUE, I was in a group called the Nonprofits. Profits spelled like P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S.
Yeah, yeah.
Your friend and mine, Rachel Jackson, also, I believe, was either in it or knew the people in it.
Right.
One of the two. But after I had already left that group, so. It was a bunch of us. And when I say a bunch of us, I mean like three of us. But it was cool.
Three of you plus Andy's kid.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I found out, you remember the Murder Files episode 1, Street Justice?
Yeah.
Now, if you remember correctly, Andy and I wrote that back for the Nonprofits.
Okay.
And then you and I adapted it for the stage in Seattle. I showed it to the folks. We added the mustache thing and the binoculars and stuff like that. It was cool. I was reminded of something that I forgot about. And that's that a friend of ours who took a directing class with Robert Rodriguez.
Cool.
And did that script in the directing class.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's footage somewhere of that from that workshop.
Wow, like a proper film.
Yeah, I know, right? Really? It's gotten some... Oh, and another guy who was there actually used that script for some sort of state theater festival. So it's weird. It's been around. It's that, made its way...
That little sketch has had a life of its own.
Exactly. And which is great. I think it... At some point in time, I know this is going to happen, Ben. You and I are going to be older than we are now, and we're going to, like, turn on a TV somewhere, and that sketch is going to be playing. And we're going to be like, you! Pointing at the...
sketch now belongs to the world.
That's right.
I want to see
but
this.
It doesn't.
I want to see this this Robert Rodriguez-inspired directorial
effort. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it exists. You know, it might have just been there for the day and then they taped over it or whatever.
Do you know?
I don't even know.
Is it called the same thing?
It was called Girlfriend at the time.
Girlfriend. I doubt if I looked up Girlfriend on Vimeo, I would find it.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of difficult, probably.
I'll just Google Girlfriend. That can't be too hard.
But no. You and I actually came up with the Murder Files episode 1, Street Justice, which I think is much better. The punchline is gone then, you know.
Yeah. It's the
obscured.
It's the not the setting of expectations, but the disillusionment, I guess, of expectations.
Yeah.
The it's a switch. The word's not coming to me, but it's where, you know, the audience is expecting one thing and they get something else.
A switcheroo.
You're but subverting expectations.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I was going for.
There was another one that Andy, I think he and I together might have wrote this, or it might have just been him. Some of that stuff blurs after the decades go by. But it was of a father and a daughter, and they're reading a bedtime story, and then another little girl comes in and is like, "Who is this?" And it's, you know, the dad has another like child that he reads to every night, and they are finding out each other. And I didn't realize how creepy it was at the time, but now that I have a child of my own, that's just weird stuff, Ben.
This is your twin sister. She's always been here, but you always just miss each other by like 5 seconds.
Okay, this is something that Jennifer and I did once as a joke. And when I say Jennifer and I did this once as a joke, I mean, I did it.
Are you going to tell me about a prank you played on your own daughter?
Maybe a little bit. I think what happened is I did this and then she chastised me in front of Betty.
Oh, that's not good.
Is how it worked. But I'm not sure. Jennifer will have to verify one way or the other. But it was just an offhand comment. Well, you know what happened to the other one?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, and this is the thing, is that there's so much stuff that I wanted to do when I had a kid. And Jennifer was like, "You're not doing any of that stuff.
It's
for real."
Oh, yeah, we bought that for your twin sister. I don't have a twin sister. Well, not anymore.
Exactly, yes. Speaking of Jennifer, let me ask you a question. Have you looked at your email?
You know what? I'm just pulling it up right now. The internet here at the theater is iffy. And so I was trying to get ahead of the game, but it looks like I am pulling up the email.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, good. Because she was working on it beforehand. All right. Well, let's do the little preamble. Hey, everybody. Hey, Ben. Do you know what episode this is?
This is episode 123.
If you've decided to start with episode 123, and why not 1, 2, 3? It's easy. You don't want to start at the beginning. What if they're bad? Sure, this makes sense. If you picked 123 at random and you don't know what's going on in the podcast, here's the plan that Ben and I sort of have for it right now.
We just talk about
people use the internet a lot, and lots of times they think they're smarter than they are because we now have knowledge at our fingertips. It's not what you know in your head, it's how fast you can search something. And once you search it, you pretty much know it. At least that's what we think. So
it's
Ben
basically
and I are
cheating
taking...
in real life.
Exactly. So Ben and I are taking an hour a week and trying just to hold a regular conversation using the information that we have in our heads. And then our wonderful Jennifer Fact Checker takes a look at the episode and sees what we got wrong and writes it to us in a segment that we like to call corrections. Corrections.
Ding.
Ding. And what do we have on tap today, Ben?
Well, we're talking... I was relating a story last week about how I have this memory when I was a kid. And I was at a relative's house, my grandmother's sister's house. And I was on a vacation with my grandparents. And I had noticed at one point that my grandparents had left, and it really, pardon me, it really freaked me out because, I felt like I had been abandoned, even though I was in a house with Aunt Elizabeth. And, I felt that because I, had a bit of a sheltered childhood, right? I never had any serious, like serious, traumas happened to me when I was a kid. My parents were always around. I always felt safe. That I felt that my separation anxiety was due to the fact that I was basically never put in that position before. But she says, I had separation anxiety, which is not related in any way to being sheltered. And then she goes on to say, when you were little, your grandparents left, but you really... But you really can't comprehend how time works at that age. It's developmentally appropriate to have that weird disconnect of being informed that your caretaker is leaving you with nice people and the physical realization that they are not physically there with you. Your people are gone, and the concept of them returning is very abstract. It's sort of like a weird, I guess, object permanence. This is me talking.
Yeah.
They're gone, yeah. And now they're, you know, they're not coming back. And of course, you know, when you're 5, 4 or 5, the amount of the length of an hour is a lot longer to a 5-year-old than it is to a 40-year-old.
True. We've talked about this before. Length of an hour when you're bored,
yeah,
stretches on a lot faster. Even more so when you're in pain.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Time dilates. Also,
if you get to leave work, I mean, if you get to leave work at 5, once 3 p.m. rolls around, forget it, man. This day is not even half over at that point.
Exactly. It feels so much longer.
I guess you were talking about Well, I mean, I forgot what we were talking about, but I'm just going to read what she says. This is number 2. Paul, it's more likely a traumatic loss would cause a block, not a long memory. Infantile amnesia is normal. People who have relatively clear memories of ages before 7 years old have some peculiarities, such as early self-taught reading around 3 or 4 years old, regular nightmares, complex vivid dreams, and many other sleep disturbances.
Yeah, I had all those things. What she's talking about is, I thought that perhaps the reason that I have, I can remember like when I was 3 was because she died when I was 3.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So I remember like before or after, but I guess what she's saying is that if I actually did have, like a normal memory, I guess I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
That maybe I wouldn't remember her at all. I'd just be like, yeah, I don't know. So early onset. Did she say early onset? Did she use that term, or did I
throw that in there?
Okay, sorry. Horrific nightmares. Had them. Early reading had that. So, I mean, it fits what she's talking about, I guess.
Every once in a while, I'll get a flash of a memory that I think is from just when I was a kid, but I can't quite, I mean, I can't place it. I don't know, if it is a memory or if it's like a snippet of a dream that I had.
Yeah.
And sometimes it drives me nuts because I want to know, where is that from? What, like, I remember there was this one moment when I was watching The Partridge Family. This is back when I was in my 20s, I guess, and an episode was on TV or something. And the intro sequence is this like animated, like Mother Partridge and these little tiny partridges following her, and they go onto this really colorful bus.
Yeah,
and it really like, I'm like, wow, that looks so familiar, even though I've never seen this show before. And I figured out that show was on when I was just a kid, when I was like probably just like a toddler, not a toddler, but like, you know, 1, 2 years old maybe, and just in front of the television set. And for whatever reason, that imagery like imprinted itself on my brain without me knowing. And it resurfaced when I watched The Partridge Family in my 20s.
Yeah, there's an episode of Doctor Who, The Pyramids of Mars, that I saw when I was a kid. I think I mentioned this before, but I'll just run through it really quick again. I was able to watch an hour of TV. I got to watch The Muppets. Yeah. And, you know, the thing I didn't get at the time when I was a kid was that there was a schedule and the Muppets were only on, you know, on that at that hour, right? I thought it was just that at that hour I could start watching TV, so they turned on the Muppets, and I watched the Muppets.
It makes sense.
And then, so one day, the babysitter was over, and she said that I could watch TV if I wanted to, so I turned on the Muppets.
Right.
But instead of the normal Muppets, it was this weird, you know, it was basically the opposite of Doctor Who, Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. I thought it was just a weird episode of the Muppet Show, and it wasn't until and I kept on telling my dad about it, and I wanted to see it again, and he had no idea what I was talking about. And then finally I saw that episode. Yeah. And the same thing, The Incredible Shrinking Man, I saw a clip of it on a TV in a department store.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was from at all until I saw it like years later. And anytime that I would see a TV show that I saw, you know, even a little bit of, I would get this really weird, eerie memory.
Yeah.
And so I think you and I have the same thing as far as that goes.
Yeah. One more interesting thing that I still can't get rid of. There was one moment. I don't think this was a recurring thing. I think this only happened once. But there was one time that I remember I was eating a bowl of cereal in the living room of the house I grew up in. And I was eating Sugar Smacks, and they were still called Sugar Smacks at that time. And yep. My sister was watching The Facts of Life. And she was watching TV, and The Facts of Life came on, and it started with the theme song. And so now, for whatever reason, whenever I think of the show The Facts of Life or I hear the theme song, I always think of Sugar Smacks. I don't taste them. It's okay. Nothing that weird, but I always associate those two things.
There was a certain move that I would do during Tai Chi. And whenever I would do that move in Tai Chi, I would think of lemon yogurt.
And do you know why?
And it was just like I was doing it one time and happened to be thinking of lemon yogurt at the time. But it got stuck in my head. So every time that I would do it, and I would do this thing. I did it to Mike Salish. He's a friend of mine from college when I went to college here in Edwardsville. I told him whenever he saw the certain bank symbol, he would think of Wolverine. And he reported that he did. You know, and it's because the bank symbol looks like Wolverine's claws, right? But you can imprint stuff like, it's not really hypnosis, but you can do that to people.
Yeah.
You can say, anytime you see this, you're going to think of this, and they will, lots of times.
That's a good way to...
I mean, I don't know about... Sorry, go ahead.
If you can sort of, like, figure out how to actually do that yourself, like, train yourself to do it, that's a good way to, like, store secret information that you don't want people to know. But you will only retrieve that information from your mind with the password, and the password being is whatever you associate that information with.
You know, I actually had a thought about that a little while back where, you could actually like collect certain rocks. And the idea would be that you would hold the rock in your hand and look at it and all that while thinking of something that you wanted to remember.
Yeah.
And then you put the rock away, and then when you hold it, I hypothesized that you would be able to retrieve that memory that you quote unquote stored in the rock. I've never tried it, but and the reason was because obviously, you know, like anything, I was a kid, I got a rock at like the Corn Palace or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I found it in my chest a while later, and I remembered being at the Corn Palace and buying the rock. And I was like, you know, seeing the rock reminded me of that time. So theoretically, you could maybe hold memories in that way.
Yeah. Or smells. I mean, smells are often closely associated with memories. And I think I heard somewhere that like the olfactory part of your brain is really close to the memory part, which is why they associate so closely together.
Oh. Maybe so. I mean,
location.
I think it's Proust. Is that how you say it? Proust, I believe.
Proust?
Had the Madeleines thing where he smelled Madeleines and then remembered a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know.
So there was one other thing I was going to say. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There is a one of those TV shows locked in my brain, TV or movie, I don't know which.
Yeah.
That I saw as a young kid, and I still have never been able to find it. All I remember is this.
Yeah.
A woman's hitchhiking.
Yeah.
And she smiles, and numbers show up on her teeth.
Wow.
It reminds me a lot of Jim Henson's old movies, like that weird kind of stop motion animation stuff that he did sometimes in some of his pieces. So I was hoping that maybe I would. There was a little exhibition of his movies. You remember this? It was at the Experience Music Project / Science Fiction Museum.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's called MoPop. I saw it, but I didn't. What's that?
They rebranded it as MoPop now, the Museum of Pop Culture.
Oh, well, I guess that makes sense.
I remember when it was the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about those white whales a lot, and I have this memory of, it's a TV show, and there's a black semi-truck that is either a villain or like something to be afraid of. Or like a monster, you know, but it's a black semi truck and it's chasing people. And I think I had a toy of this too at one point, but I can't remember. Every once in a while, I'll think, yeah, what was that from? But it might have been like an episode of Knight Rider or something, for all I can remember.
Yeah, I was gonna say there is an episode of Knight Rider where there's David Hasselhoff as a twin.
Yeah, yeah,
with and a goatee. I believe he drives a black semi.
Yeah.
Anyway. Although there's also this Steven, is it Steven Spielberg? I think Steven Spielberg's movie Duel,
right,
might be about a guy who's trying to escape a truck.
I thought maybe also that it was from Maximum Overdrive, because that's about semi trucks that turn into killing machines. But yeah, I watched that recently, and it's not.
But the villain in Maximum Overdrive is a Green Goblin truck, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, like the main villain. There's a bunch of. I mean, that's like the head truck.
Exactly.
All right.
It's funny too, because
yeah,
people are probably going to reboot Maximum Overdrive eventually with, you know, self-driving cars, yeah, whenever they happen,
or CG trucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, let's move on. I guess we were talking about senior executives of large companies and how they were paid. I don't remember that part of the conversation, but anyway.
I mean, we were talking about CEOs of large companies in general, and about, I remember what it was. It was a note that, you know, people were like, Jeff Bezos makes this much money, and
yet
his workers are living in tents. Yeah, and the idea was the fact that that is happening to the workers kind of goes with him getting so much money. Like the two things aren't unrelated.
Connected. So anyway, she says that most senior executives of larger companies in the U.S. do not pay income tax because they don't draw a salary. It's not uncommon that they are paid $1 a year. All their remuneration is distribution from shares, stocks, and other investments. And they have a very, very, very clever tax attorney and investment broker they have very, very clever tax attorneys and investment brokers who can sort out their tax burden for them. Hashtag loopholes. So,
if
you want to get angry at the system.
Ah, who does? Not me, that's for sure.
We were also talking about, this is a correction number 4 from last week. You were talking about Amazon warehouses, and I said there are no warehouses in the city of Seattle. You said there used to be. And I said, I think there might have been one down in Kent. And she says, there's an Amazon warehouse in Kent. There used to be one in Soto on Dawson. Pickers are but one warehouse job. I loved working at the warehouse. Picking and problem solving were my favorite. My screensaver just kicked on. I hated Banderline and packaging. I don't know what Banderline is, but I didn't know that Jennifer worked at an Amazon warehouse.
You know, there's this thing where if you were working at Amazon, you had to go to the warehouse at least sometime to do stuff.
Oh, really?
And some people wanted to go. Yeah, I never did. I never went to the warehouse. And I think it's because I worked in customer service and nobody wanted to work in customer service. So they were happy to keep us there.
Yeah. I actually did work in the office that was the original Amazon office.
Oh, interesting.
There was a, there's a company there now. It's a, like sound component rentals, like for events. And, and, but somebody that I know was setting up a temporary office in like this spare office that they had and called me in to set up their networking and stuff. And I, and he told me that the office that where we were was Jeff Bezos's original office. And there was a large warehouse connected to this, and there still is connected to this office. So it might've been, I don't know if that's actually where Amazon's quote first warehouse was. And of course, this is all like secondhand information I'm getting, you know. But I did see a story on Jeff Bezos that like Evening Magazine did on him back in 98 or 99 or something. And they show him at his office and it's not that it wasn't the same place. So they had either moved by that point or I was being told a lie.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Washington slept here.
We were talking about dominoes filling in potholes and I was wondering what the stuff was that you filled potholes with. Was it concrete or asphalt? And I'd settled on asphalt. And I was right, because asphalt potholes are filled with asphalt, usually a cold asphalt patch which cures quickly.
Aha.
And then she says, keep it wrong, guys. But wait, there's one more thing.
Oh.
One last thing. She's pulling a Columbo on us here. Everyone knows, this is a separate email, everyone knows trickle-down economics is absurd. Everyone. Anyone who suggests that as viable is either stupid, crazy, or a bald-faced liar. Yeah, I think we were talking about that last week.
Trickle-down stuff. Yeah. So yeah, this is my, is it my second week, I guess, not being on Twitter? Or... do you know for sure?
I don't know specifically. I haven't been keeping track, but I will go back and look once you get back on Twitter, because you know we keep a poll for these things.
So the one thing that we used to do, and I guess we can redo it a little bit, is what has Paul gotten from the news?
Okay.
I mean, because I haven't, this is the big thing, is I'm not looking at the news, but there's stuff that I find out. One of the things I had to do was I had to start, like back when Barack Obama was running for president, I donated to his campaign.
Yeah. So I got, you probably still get emails from him too, don't you?
Got a whole bunch of email lists, and I've done my best to try to get off of all the lists.
Yeah.
Because one of those things the lists do, they bring the news in. So before I was able to exercise that, I found out about Justice Kennedy retiring.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know that that's happening. And due to the manner in which I was given that, it looks like they're hoping that he doesn't retire before the elections come in, so that somehow... stuff can happen.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, you remember when Justice Scalia passed away? Was it Scalia?
Yes.
Yeah, and
I had nothing to do with it.
This was like 9 months before the election, and yep. Mitch McConnell, then and still current leader of the Senate, said the American people deserve to have a voice, and so refused to hold a hearing on Obama's selection to replace Scalia, Merrick Garland, who by all accounts was a very moderate person.
Yeah.
And so now that there's going to be another Supreme Court seat opening up, everybody who's not a Republican is saying, let's wait until after the midterms. Because then, if the blue wave happens, which a lot of people are hoping that it does, then the Democrats will regain control of either the House or the Senate, or, you know, hopefully both. Probably the House more so than the Senate, I think. And we'll be able to not hold hearings on whatever sycophant Trump puts into or tries to put into the Supreme Court. So they're trying, but McConnell's, you know, he's saying we need to hold a vote right now. So, you know, being called a hypocrite
is nothing.
It's not an insult to to them.
Well, I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure at the end of the day, they're like, oh, these people, why do they got to be so mean? That kind of
there
thing.
Somebody posted on Facebook, there was a an article where it said that most companies are giving like stock buybacks thanks to the tax refunds that Trump put in place and not increasing wages. And, you know, in a normal society, that would be, you know, inspire outrage. But today it's just like, of course that's what they did. They made rich people richer and they're not giving money to the working people and not creating jobs.
Yeah, I'm really trying to be
back down to this trickle down economics theory.
Really trying to be positive. And I'm positive that things are it's one of those things of like once the election, and by the election, not the 2016, but once the primary got called for him,
yeah,
right, that was kind of it. That was like, we were like, okay, well, this is what we're signing up for then.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's a sort of feeling of powerlessness, whatever, but I wasn't part of that process. You know, the other folks that I share the cunt with are like that. And that was the big thing, is that they're not going to go away just because, you know, even if the Senate thing works or the House of Representatives thing works, it's one of those things of where a lot of people don't vote.
Yeah.
And they just don't, and they won't, or whatever. But that doesn't mean that if they did vote, they would vote, you know, the same way that I feel about all that. And so I've been trying, again, to be the one thing, of course, like I said before, trying to do the secret ballot thing. You know, you know pretty much the way that my mind runs as far as how politics things work. But I'm going to do my best of, you know, I'm not saying exactly who I'm voting for. I will vote. But the main thing is that nowadays, if you, like, advertise which candidate you're at, lots of times you alienate a lot of other people. And I like to be able to talk to people.
Yeah.
And not have them write me off. Of course, you know, there's nothing to stop someone from saying, if you don't tell me who you voted for, then I am going to write you off. What can you do? You know, not a lot.
There was a new development coming out in the Anthony Kennedy retiring case, which is that his son, Justice Kennedy's son, and the Trump Organization were dealing with like a $1 billion loan of some sort. I don't know who's loaning who the money. I just know that they were like,
huh.
People are wondering why healthy Justice Kennedy is, you know, otherwise still fit for office, still fit for the bench, is retiring. And then they're like, oh, well, there's this $1 billion loan between these two parties. So everybody's like, ooh, what's going on there?
Yeah,
shady dealings.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the stuff. I keep on thinking about Trevor Noah talking about African politics.
Yeah,
and about how basically they just make you tired of caring about stuff, and then no one gets involved because it's all just, you know.
Yeah.
And I get it, you know, it makes sense to me. how people just get fatigued and they're like, okay, whatever. Whatever, that's it, I'm done. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's just that, I mean, these folks have got to have people advising them, right? They must have some people like going, hey, just so that you know, I mean, this will last for a while, but people get weird and violent after, you know, so long without getting this normal stuff that we normally give them. Right? I mean, they got to know that. I figure.
Well, I don't know. You would think that it all depends on who you hire as your advisors.
Yeah, right?
Are you
going to
hire somebody who, you know, with integrity and smarts, or are you going to hire somebody who thinks just like you?
Yeah, good point. It's like Battlefield Earth all over.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I still haven't seen that, and I'm probably not going to see it.
Oh, you never need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's not on the list. There was a glimmer of hope this last week where a 28-year-old woman beat out a 10-term congressman in the Bronx. I wish I could remember her name, but I can't remember her name.
Oh, I know about this.
Alexandria, I think is her name.
Jennifer showed me a clip of her finding out, a clip of the the politician finding out that she won.
She was on,
and that was cool.
She was on the Colbert Report, not the Colbert Report. She was on Late Night with Stephen Colbert, and I saw a clip. And something that she said was, you know, he was like, "How did you beat this 10-term congressman?" And she said, "We changed who voted," meaning the polls had her down like 3 weeks before the election. The polls had her down like 30 points, and then she won by 15 points. And so the pollsters poll potential voters, but what they were able to do were they were able to bring out 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, non-white people to millennials who, and I'm not, you know, this categories of people that would not think normally would vote in an off year midterm primary.
Yeah.
But they did. So like her line was they changed who voted. So they changed the polls and they changed the election. And so, you know, that's just a glimmer of hope. And it's the Democratic Party can like latch onto that instead of not.
Well, I mean, this is
just trying to wrest defeat from the jaws of victory once again.
Yeah, that there's something that, and I try to, you know, think of a broad view of this kind of thing. But one of the ills of society, I don't know, I guess you could say whatever, are people who are afraid of losing what they have, that instead of improving themselves, try to knock other people down.
Right.
And I'll give you an example. So like, you know, there are more Spanish speaking people moving into the country. Instead of, you know, learning Spanish,
yeah,
you know, people try to make other people not speak Spanish,
dehumanizing them.
Right, exactly. It depends on how hard you want to work at, you know, which goal you want to do and all that sort of thing. And the basic concept, you know, that I think we're showing in the thing that you're talking about is that eventually, people are going to pay attention to what you're doing and go with the option that isn't business as usual, isn't, you know. I mean, that's part of the thing, part of the reason people are upset and sad is that, you know, none of the stuff that's happening is happening in a vacuum. You know?
Yeah.
the people that are enforcing these policies that folks don't like got approved by Congress. You know, there weren't huge fights to keep these people out. I mean, there was talk about it, but not a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah. Well, you know,
so
to a lot of people, change is scary, and we must prevent change from happening.
Yeah. And the great thing about change is it will happen whether you want it to or not. You can try to
one way or
direct
another
it and flow with it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, is it going to be positive change or negative change?
Yeah, all I know is that I want to keep Betty happy with me so that when she's stronger than me, she cares about me enough to not get me. Oh, hey, by the way, was it you that was telling me about Rick and Morty?
Way back when? Probably. I like the show.
Yeah,
Rick and
Morty is
one of those things. It's one of those things where it's like I enjoy watching the show, but I don't like telling people that I like the show because the fan base is really off-putting.
We'll see. Okay, there we go. That explains it then. Because I'm not involved in the fan base at all, but I've seen all three seasons now.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... I can see what the problem is, probably with a lot of the fan base. I don't know this for sure, but Rick is not written as someone that you want to emulate. There is appeal to him for a certain type of person where he's smart, he doesn't have to listen to anybody, and he doesn't care about anybody.
He gives people permission to be jerks.
But the show specifically points out that that's not a great way to live.
Correct.
I mean, he's
It doesn't glorify him or his lifestyle.
It's funny because he reminds me of people that I knew in college and things like that, where I would see them and I would be like, you know, you're awesome. You give, you know, you don't care what anyone thinks of you, and this is a great way to live and all that. And then I'd like, you know, hang out with them for a week or so.
Yeah.
And everyone that they meet is mad at them.
Yeah.
And they live in, you know, a kind of crappy apartment with no real friends. And I realized the reason why they're friends with me is because I'm telling them that they're great. And that's kind of what they want to have around them. But there's a really short shelf life on that.
Yeah.
And they end up screwing up whatever they win. So.
And yet they blame everybody else.
Exactly.
There's no introspection there.
And so, yeah, I think that's... I don't know that for a fact. And, you know, if you're a fan of the show and you're not like this, I'm not saying that about you. But, yeah, I bet you that's probably where the problems come.
Yeah, no, I really like the show. I've seen all the episodes, at least in the first two seasons, a number of times. I think I've only seen season three once through.
Oh, yeah. I just got done watching it. I really like it. Now I'm watching Into the Badlands again. New season that I haven't seen before. And you know who's in the new season? Nick Frost. Yeah.
I don't know why I said it like that. I've been making my way through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm finally up to the last one I saw was Ant-Man.
Oh yeah, because I haven't where did you see Ant-Man?
I originally saw Ant-Man in the movie, but in the movie at the movies. So even movies that I've already seen, I'm rewatching because in some cases, say in the first Avengers movie or the first Iron Man, it's been years since I've seen them. Yeah. So I'm revisiting all of them and I'm picking up movies that I haven't seen. Like I never saw any of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. So I've seen the first one.
Oh, they're
now
pretty good. I like them. Yeah,
I did like it. The one thing that I did, I was with Guardians of the Galaxy all the way. Like I bought into everything except...
Yeah.
Peter's cassette would have totally worn out by now.
Oh, well, yeah.
But, I saw Ant-Man. I think the next one is Civil War, Captain America Civil War, which I've seen.
Oh, yeah, Civil War. Actually, hey, that's a really good time to call for "Hey, buddy."
All right, there's some fuzzy logic going on there.
Betty. Okay, well, you'll see in just a second what's going on. But so I didn't see Ant-Man on like any of the streaming services. Did you rent it? How did you?
Through iTunes.
Okay,
that's how I'm watching a lot of these movies because they're not available on Netflix.
Here, guess what? Guess what Ben's about to watch?
Infinity War?
Civil War.
Oh.
So,
Captain America Ben,
you may be interested to know that Captain America Civil War is one of Betty's favorite films.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not up there, but it's up there, if that makes sense.
You listed it as one of your top five favorite films.
Did I?
Yeah. You did.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday.
I forgot. At lunch.
What were the other favorite films?
Yeah, Betty, what are your top five favorite films right now? Maybe they've changed since yesterday.
They always change. My top five change all the time.
She's thinking.
Yeah.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Good choice.
Moana. Spirited Away. Ponyo, Thor Ragnarok.
Hey, those are good. That's a good top five. What about you, Ben? What are your top five?
I would say that Ghostbusters is probably number one. But that just wins out because I've seen it the most, and I still like it. Mad Max Fury Road. Is probably number two. Sometimes it'll be number one as well. Let's see what else. The other one that comes to mind is Breakfast Club, but that's just because I really loved it when I was a kid.
Okay, Betty's leaving. Keep going.
And what else? What other movies can I just constantly rewatch? Oh, Die Hard.
Oh yeah,
Die Hard is a good one. Die Hard I can rewatch a lot. I'm basing these on the viewability. Viewability.
Okay, yeah, I'll figure out with repeat viewability.
And I guess
too.
I'll agree with Betty. Monty Python and the Holy Grail is probably in the top five.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
I'm gonna delete Breakfast Club from this top five. Just get that.
Okay.
Get rid of that. And I'll put in Scrooged because Die Hard and Scrooged I rewatch every year at Christmas time.
Oh, nice.
So they must be up there.
Okay, for me, I'm going to have to go with... I'm going to go with Snatch.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. I like that one.
As one of them. Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
Buckaroo Banzai. Mad Max Fury Road and Amelie,
yeah.
That's what I got so far.
I want to give a
viewability.
Yeah. I want to give a an honorable mention to Army of Darkness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean
it may not be
really
in the top 5, but it's certainly in the top 10.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Top 5 arbitrary kind of.
Exactly.
So there's a film that I can't think of, but next time we talk, I'll probably be able to tell you it.
Okay.
That I think might actually be available now. It's one of those things of if it's a foreign film, the chances of me getting a chance to watch it are pretty slim.
Yeah.
Around here, I'd have to drive to St. Louis. And it's not happening, but I think it's actually out now. It's in black and white, and it looks really cool. It's fairy tale based and very strange Eastern European film.
What's the name of it?
That's the thing. It's an Eastern European film, and I don't know. I think it's got the word November in the title.
How do you know?
It might just be called November.
How do you know about this film?
I saw a trailer for it on IMDb.
Ah.
I was looking at something else, and then the trailer came up, and I'm like, whoa, this looks great. So we'll see. Oh, Intacto is a really good one, too. Which I still want to get, obviously. So
cool.
Hey, Ben, guess what?
Hey, it's that time.
It's that time.
It's exactly that
so,
time.
So, well, I wanted to let you know also my D&D group that I was so sad about breaking up has come back, but they're going to do it once a month for 4 hours instead of, you know, 2 hours every Wednesday.
Wow, and how do you feel about this schedule change?
Hey, I you know, it's one of those things, if I would have hated it, but after not having been in the group for so long, I take what I can get.
Exactly.
And there is something about playing for a while that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You can get through an entire campaign, really delve deep into it.
Exactly.
All right.
At least get through a segment of a campaign.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Cool.
But yeah, so I guess that's about it. Again, still looking forward to your eventual visit out here.
Planning that.
And
hey, programming note, unless you hear otherwise, we're on for normal time next week.
Oh, sounds great. All right. And I hope the things are going well.
Yeah, they are. I hope your things are going well, too, and I implore you to keep it wrong.
Thanks, Ben. Keep it wrong.
All right, I'll
talk to you more later.
All right, take care.
Yep.
Bye.